thrown. Did you get to the bottom of this at all?
No, I didn't. Apparently, he might have thrown a bottle out of his car. I don't know, but that apparently was before the police arrived. I'm not quite sure about those details. And like I said, he might have made some bad decisions, but it sure didn't justify what they did.
Talked to one witness. She said that the police approached the door all pumped up, as though they wanted to. They were expecting trouble, and they were kind of, you know, do whatever they had to do. They didn't approach it in a conciliatory or mediatory fashion. And you interviewed the children afterward yourself. Did you ask any questions around this issue as to how the police approached? Did you get any indication from any of the witnesses how this happened?
No, I just, my wife saw the police roll up to the scene, and she claimed that they did put on their leather gloves, they got their batons ready, and the first thing that stuck in my mind was maybe they knew who this individual was before they got to the scene, they were going to take care of him, maybe. I don't know. I think that apparently they might have known that there was going to be some severe confrontation before it even happened. That's my opinion.
Well, certainly the man had a record of a prior incident with the police in terms of, I guess, an assault on an officer or something in Capitola or Live Oak, or I'm not sure. And that might have been on the record for this man. So that could have been one of the things that happened. Going back to the district attorney encounter you had, can you be more specific if you remember the kinds of questions they asked you that led you to believe they were looking for justification for the police?
Well, let's see.
This isn't a trick question, and take your time on it. You might not remember anything at the moment, but what were the kinds of questions they asked you?
Their primary concern was, of course, the swinging bat. Did I or anybody I knew witness him striking the officer with the swinging bat? And to this day, I still don't have any of the neighbors who have seen the swinging bat. That was their primary concern, and I told them so that everyone I interviewed, nobody saw the swinging bat.
Now,
I might add that when I talked to Lori, she claimed that she never even saw him with the bat, and she saw the whole incident. She asked me if I saw him with the bat, because she didn't see him with the bat.
Have you been able to talk further with Lori since this incident? I know she's been rather upset. Have you been able to communicate with her?
I did go over to her house maybe Tuesday or Wednesday and explain to her, because she saw me interviewing with various people, and it's sort of, she didn't like that. But I did confront her at her doorstep and explain to her my feelings and my what process I'm going to go through to try to solve this problem and to try to set it right.
And that process is going to be?
Well, like I said, I have some great resources at my disposal. And I'm going to investigate, and I haven't decided what the best avenue to take yet is.
I understand. If I'm not mistaken, I've heard that a private investigator has already been hired by, I guess, either Brian. I guess Brian's not in the position to do much hiring, but perhaps Lori, his wife, or perhaps one of his relatives is trying to protect him because he's facing charges, right?
Yes. They have retained counsel, and I'm not sure who retained them. But that counsel has retained a private investigator to investigate the crime scene, and he is going around interviewing people right now, basically as we speak. And I will stay in contact with him and get the results from him.
What do you think? Is this going to just sort of die down, or are people sufficiently concerned in your neighborhood to, let's say, go to city council meeting on Tuesday night, which is when the city council meets? It'll be meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, when there'll be a public comment period when anyone can come and speak at the mic. Are people going to be concerned enough to contact the city council by phone at 429-3550, which is the call-in number for the city council? By the way, folks, if you're listening and you are concerned, you can call that number even today, even though the day is Sunday and the council chambers are closed. There's a 24-hour message line on that number, 429-3550, or the Citizens Police Review Board at 429 3262, which is another number that's a 24-hour message number if you're concerned about police misconduct. And incidentally, you don't have to be a witness to file a complaint about this. If you are concerned that police may have acted in an abusive or inappropriate or excessive manner, you can still make that phone call. Again, City Council, 429-3550. Citizens Police Review Board, 429-3262. And if you want to more information on this case, or you have more information on this case and want to get in touch with us here, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, also shares a line with a group called Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure, which is a group concerned with police misconduct that was particularly, actually it formed during the Happy John Dine killing last November. And the number there is the same number as the HUF number, 423-4833, the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. What do you think? Is the community going to stay together on this? What's your feeling? Are people getting bored with the subject? Are they getting more organized? What do you think?
Oh, I don't think they're getting bored with it. I think that we are getting more organized. I'm still very concerned at what all the neighbors think of this. I'm still getting all their thoughts. And basically, it's the same thought. Everyone has the same thought, that this was very unnecessary. And I think people will proceed.
I know that some folks have already called the mayor to talk to her about this, because she was instrumental last time in getting the actual police reports put into the public library, which usually never happens. In fact, that's the only case that I've ever heard in Santa Cruz where they've actually taken the district attorney's investigation, which includes the police reports, and put them in the library. Usually those reports are under lock and key and sealed, and you don't get to see them because they're part of the so-called sacred personnel files in the police department, which the Police Officers Association, a very powerful union, has protected in state law and insulated from any kind of public scrutiny. And they're actually, as we speak, trying to make it purge the files even more frequently. So if a court wants to find out through what's called a Pitches motion, which is a motion to see if a police officer has passed instances of misconduct, then the court can declare, can look and get those past names, give those names to the defense counsel and say, the officer has been accused of the following instances of misconduct, and or at least these are individuals he's had these complaints from. You can go talk to that person. Those records are being, we may have to face the fact they may be destroyed as well if the Police Officers Association has their way. Would you consider yourself an anti-police person? Are you a critic of the police frequently?
No, not generally, no. Although I do tend to monitor their behavior, maybe more than some people do, but no, I'm not anti-police.
You know, I'm a member of two organizations that are frequently critical of police, Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAN it's called, that's a group, by the way, whose phone number, should you have any problems with police, is 475-2012, 475-2012. And Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure, the number I mentioned before, 423-4833. So I do belong to organizations that are critical of the police on many occasions. Although I must say I've written two commendations about police officers in the last 2 months for officers who are very helpful in different ways. I think you got to give credit where credit is due. But you yourself are not an active partisan of police oversight or anything. You haven't been spending a lot of time boosting the Citizens Police Review Board. You haven't been suing the police department and so forth?
No, not up until now.
So what you've seen may have had an impact on it.
Yes, it has. It really, really changed my view on how the police might react if I needed them someday. I'm going to have to be very cautious when I approach them from now on.
Make sure you have a bulletproof vest with you at all times.
And no bat.
Yes. No bat, no bottles. Well, and no toy guns. And no radio. Some people thought it was a radio he had in his hand, not a toy gun, because that's what he was... We're talking about Happy John Dine, what he was seen with right before he was shot down by Officer Carey at Soquel and Front Street. Wow. Well, you know, it encourages me when neighbors are willing to reach out to find out what's going on, to speak up about these issues on the air, because, you know, who knows? I mean, I can't guarantee you're not going to suffer some kind of retaliation for speaking publicly. And we are speaking, by the way, with Rick Peterson, who is a neighbor to Brian Andrus across the street, the man who took, was it four bullets, something like
that? Four bullets, yes.
He's still in the hospital in San Jose. And of course, having been shot, he's now being charged, because if they didn't charge him, he'd be charging the city an arm and a leg for what they did to him. So it's an act of some courage for a person like yourself to come forward and speak this way, as it was for other neighbors who came forward. We've actually done interviews with other neighbors. How many witnesses would you say you've spoken to about this issue who are actually direct eyewitnesses to the shooting? Three children or four children or so?
There was three children who were in the close vicinity of the shooting. Maybe two or three adults.
Your wife was across the street on the porch.
Yes, yes.
Was there anybody else who saw this?
Not firsthand, no.
So in a way, you kind of, although apparently there was another witness the police claimed to have that saw the bat and the bat striking one or more of the officers.
Yes, they do. They do claim to have an eyewitness that saw that.
This is the mystery eyewitness, who no doubt may show up in court, or hopefully at least we'll learn more about it. At least there will be a court case, unlike the case of Happy John Dine, where he got a complete burial in all senses of the word. His ashes were scattered, and the case, of course, has been scattered as well. Well, my time on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides is drawing to a close here. The next programmer has arrived. I've got about 5 minutes. Is there anything you want to say to your community or to the city, the police department, or just generally to the audience about your thoughts on this case that you think you want to put out that you haven't said or that you want to say again?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that, maybe they think they did what they had to do, but we are left with all the cleanup in the neighborhood now. We have to deal with we are left with the responsibility of making sure all the kids handle this correctly now. The kids most definitely have a different point of view about the police now. Some of the kids are worried that they are going to get shot by the police. Kids are scared to have toy guns now. And I think that it's unfortunate that we are left with all the cleanup and with no assistance from the police department. We are responsible for finding our own counseling for children, and also myself, my wife, we're just sort of left out in the cold. We witnessed the shooting, and that's for sensitive people, that could be very traumatic, or for almost everybody it's traumatic. And like I said, I think it's unfortunate that we're left with all the cleanup.
It's also, I guess, traumatic in the sense that, as you've said before, you don't really know who could be next in this kind of situation. I mean, police officers probably didn't intend to do what they did. I mean, it certainly has created a problem for them and a public relations nightmare. Although the Santa Cruz Sentinel has had a different perspective. Do you have any point of view on how that... there have been two stories in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, one on Monday by Karen Clark, the other on Tuesday by Mae Wong. Have you read both those stories?
No, I haven't. I just read the one by Karen. She interviewed me at the scene later that night. And she put some quotation marks around some of my phrases, and they weren't exactly as I quoted. They were scrambled a little bit, and I was a little disappointed in her writing.
She perhaps misrepresented the case in some way?
A little bit. I do feel she did, yes.
Do you feel the account in the Sentinel was generally accurate or not, or do you have a clear enough recollection of it to comment on it?
Well, I don't feel it was very accurate. I really don't.
What are the problems with the account that you remember?
She also quoted my son, and she scrambled his quote around to make it look like he can't even speak properly. She put her quote in there and totally scrambled it, whereas it didn't even make sense.
Did you see a pro-police bias in the article?
A little bit.
You feel that because the story she gave was that witnesses somehow confirmed that the officers were struck with a bat several times, actually, before they opened fire.
Yeah.
That was part of her story.
That was her story. Well, like I said, I didn't witness that. everybody I talked to did not witness that either.
Were you aware of any other witnesses who you didn't talk to who might have seen it?
No. No other witnesses that I saw that were around.
Perhaps the police have an extrasensory perception person who's kind of on duty, keeping an eye on what's going on in the city.
Possibly so. The bottom line is I wish I did talk to somebody who said, yeah, I did see him strike three police officers with the bat. That would ease my mind a lot. And I'm not denying that it didn't happen, but everybody I talked to, nobody saw it. So I would like to talk to somebody who did actually see that.
So you're going to be keeping your ears open and your eyes open, and you are talking to other neighbors, and you do have legal resources yourself. Will you get back to Free Radio if you come up with some more information you think the public should know about?
Yes, I'd be more than happy to.
All right, well, listen, Rick Peterson, thank you very much for coming to the studio. And we will have you back whenever you have got more to tell us. You can either phone it in or call in and, just avoid shootouts with the police. That's my advice. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you very much.
All right. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're about to end this show, and I'll try to delay Rick before he leaves so I can say hello to him. Hang out outside for a few moments, Rick. We had a lot of stuff we were going to do today. We haven't been able to do it, but we've been doing some fine stuff anyway. We're going to talk about Salinas and the new panhandling law there. Hopefully we'll have a tape on that subject. I know that video journalist Becky Johnson has done some video on it and is writing a story on Street Spirit on that issue. We are going to be playing the Tom Reveille tape. Tom Reveille is a pioneer broadcaster for Free Radio Station in Venice, and we interviewed him a week ago, and hopefully we can have his demo tape on soon. Tom, my apologies that hasn't come up as quickly as it should have. We're also give an interview with David Silva from the City Council on the upcoming Tuesday session. I was able to give you a summary of what that was about, but we haven't been able to go into it. San Jose successfully protested yesterday against the attempt to remove homeless people from St. James Park by a smear job on the front page of the San Jose Mercury News a week ago on Monday, when they did a story that completely distorted what was going on in St. James Park, a park where Food Not Bombs feeds and homeless people gather in San Jose. And we have an interview with Adam Welsh on that. We were unable to play today, and hopefully we'll have time and opportunity to do that in the future. We also have a long interview it's actually a speech by John Crew in Watsonville, talking about how police are using gang profiles to get everybody and their mother into the mug books, and that's a real problem. But hey, we can only do one thing at a time. But do join us. Join us next Thursday when we will resume Bathrop Spears Broadside, 6 o'clock in the evening. I'll be on from 6 to 8, and come to City Council at 7 o'clock on Tuesday. You'll be hearing people speaking about the right to sleep at night at Oral Communications. I believe David Silva has a special as arranged for folks to speak who don't usually speak, not just the line of the raging activists like myself you often hear, but people you don't usually hear telling their side of how the sleeping ban affects all of us. Coming up next is that reckless woman who's been giving us a little extra time. I want to thank her especially.
Hey, beautiful show, Robert. Did you get a chance to tape any of that? That'd be a great loop tape. All your guests, I want to thank them, too, for coming out, because they were just kick-ass today.
Hey, I think we do have a tape. We're going to give you a loop tape to play, and we're going to go out on a little Tom Petty with Full Moon Fever, and you can get hot in your show, as you always do.
Ow! Ow!
Stand.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. It's coming up on 6 o'clock and time for Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, 2 hours of civil rights for the poor, for the rich, for everybody who's concerned. Stay with us. We're going to have guests Jorge Castro. We're going to have a number of mystery guests. We're going to have interviews from all over the state. Don't go away.
We're gonna make it.
that was Billy Joel. We didn't start the fire, and of course, nothing could be truer. And that's what the show is all about. We're dealing with the fires that were started already, and we're trying to respond with some water and some good human heat, real heat. In the studio with us, we have Jorge Castro, who recently won a jury trial. You heard him on the last show talking with B.E. Smith, and he went to court, and by God, before a jury, he won in less than an hour. The jury decided not guilty. We're going to hear some of the tense comments in the hallway before that verdict now as we kind of gear up the show. And after that, we're going to be hearing from one of the jurors who will tell us exactly why, at least he, and certainly to some extent why some of the other jurors didn't believe the prosecution had proved its case. So stay tuned. Bathroom Spears Broadsides goes now to the Tuesday corridors of the Hall of Justice a couple of days ago at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse.
The Halls of Justice, the Young Justice of the House, and it's probably the court officially closes with nine, I'm not sure how it belongs to the jury court and the pressure. There are some folks who are in the audience who don't have any options.
No.
You spent a lot of hours and no one picked their thoughts on it.
Well, I have thoughts, but I don't have thoughts that I can put into words right now.
Okay. And you observed this for most of the trial?
Very well, yep.
Did you get any impression as to who was telling the truth and who was lying?
Yeah, I would say George presented himself well, and just from all the character witnesses and everything presented, and even observing both in their mannerisms and with Sergeant Clark, I don't care about his reputation or anything, but just the way he fidgeted or smiles, there is a reasonable doubt. So there's definitely, it's hard to say one way or the other. Both stories are conflicting about 180 degrees. So if there's not reasonable doubt, justice will be done in this case.
How long have you known Harvey, the judge?
2 years plus.
And would you say that you're biased? I mean, are you? He's a friend of yours, you'll support him no matter what he does? Or?
Well, no, I just heard about this trial. It's been very informative to come, and actually, as the DA would say, it's been very insightful to see how they run their sting operations around town, see how the whole process is going. I was just more intrigued of just coming to see how this would play out. Plus, having a little interest in George and being casual acquaintances and, I would say, friends.
Is Sergeant here told the truth?
No. Flat out, no. Mm-hmm. It's bottom line.
Well, you're not afraid to say something in his presence,
are you? Are you kidding? No. Max.
Do you have any experiences with Sergeant Clark that... in other cases that might be of interest to people who are listening?
No, but I would care not to either. It almost scares me just in the fact of how he presents himself and how possibly he uses his position influentially to sway a jury and to make his opinion credible. Just from observing people for my whole life and checking mannerisms out, it scares me.